It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Tomorrow is an important day for the U.S. World Cup soccer team, which faces Germany for the right to advance out of group play onto the elimination round of the 2014 tournament, and one step closer to a trophy America has never won. Even though it needs only a tie to advance, the U.S. is a decided underdog against Germany, one of the most successful nations in international play, having won three World Cups. Whatever odds the U.S. team faces tomorrow, they are nothing compared to the slim chances the United States team was given back in 1950 when it faced heavily favored England in the World Cup on June 29, 1950. The U.S. literally shocked the sports world that year by beating the Brits 1-0 in Brazil, the last time the World Cup was played there. It's considered one of the greatest upsets in World Cup history. I'm joined now by phone by Pennsylvania native and former Penn State soccer coach Walter Barr, one of two surviving members of the 1950 U.S. World Cup soccer team. Walter Barr, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
With the World Cup back in Brazil, what kind of memories are coming back to you about your experiences with the U.S. team back in 1950?
Well, the big thing was that we were a 500-1 underdog, and if you want to put a title on our team or whatever, I think it's always better to be the underdog than it is the favorite. When you're the underdog, the favorite team has a tendency to ease up a little bit, and the underdog may feel a little bit insulted by the odds and play a little bit better than they usually play.
Do you think that the English team may have underestimated the United States back then?
Oh, I would think so. England was king of the roost for many, many years up there with the top half dozen teams in the world year in and year out. We were a bunch of amateurs, really. It was a professional league, but no one made a league from the salary. I think the most I ever made for a game, an all-star game or something, was $50, which was as much as I was making a week teaching school.
What was the level of interest in the U.S. team and its participation in the World Cup back in 1950?
Not much. There was very little publicity about it. Most people didn't watch soccer. Most people, if they did, you had to explain what the World Cup was and how teams were selected to play in it. Now, back then, it was a completely different atmosphere, and some good soccer played back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
How many Americans were playing soccer during the height of your playing career, Walter?
I would have no idea, but soccer traditionally in this country was East Coast with ethnic clubs, and then a few spots around Chicago, Pittsburgh, the West Coast had some teams, mostly Mexican background, but I would have no idea how many played soccer, but it was usually because the father or the family came from a soccer-playing group. Playgrounds, most of the playgrounds didn't have soccer, but during my time, there were some in Philadelphia. Most of them were either a boys' club or a local tavern or some industry. Industry was big with the baseball teams and the soccer teams in the Philadelphia area.
How did you end up playing soccer instead of another sport like baseball?
Well, I played baseball and I played basketball, and soccer was the big sport in our neighborhood, which was in Philadelphia, a section called Kensington, and we had a boys' club, the Lighthouse Boys' Club. Baseball and soccer were their two big sports. A lot of British people in the neighborhood, Scotch, Irish, English. And soccer in that particular neighborhood was the big sport. You could go 20 blocks away and they didn't have any soccer. A lot of it was from the ethnic groups that came in. The one exception that I knew about was the Catholic Church, who had a soccer team in every parish in the St. Louis area. But for the most part, it was they used to call it the foreigners' game. But the quality of play was pretty good. In fact, for the first World Cup and the second World Cup and the third World Cup, this small boys' club, Lighthouse Boys Club, had players on the national team that played in the World Cup back on those dates.
So how was the U.S. team chosen, and how did you end up earning your place on the team, and at what position?
Well, I was a midfield player. That we called him a left halfback and a right halfback at that time. But the selection for the team, there were five regions that they had pointed out as tryout spots for the Olympic team. And their job was to have tryout games, and eventually each region was to get down to one team. And then the final two teams had a final game in St. Louis, and they picked 10 players from the East. Excuse me. They picked 8 players from the East and 8 players from the West. The West at that time, to give you an idea, Pittsburgh was a Western team. From Pittsburgh East, that was Region 1, up the New England area, New York area, Philadelphia, Maryland area. But it was just a haphazard pick, really, by some old-time players that put a team together. Then they called it the finals of the Olympic tryout. 8 players from the East and 8 players from the West made the game. The final selection was made after that game, and again they had a even match of players from the East and players from the West, with very little time to put the team together, a couple of days.
Your second game in the tournament was against England, which was which was expected to challenge Brazil for the title.
Right.
So what was the feeling among the U.S. players going into that game?
Well, we had nothing to lose. Our spirits were good. And as I say, the last thing you want to be is the favorite, no matter who's playing. We played a couple of practice games. We played an English league team, select team, in Randall's Island in New York a couple of days before we left. And they beat us 1-0 on a goal in the last 15 minutes or so. That was the only big-time team we played against before we got to Brazil, and it took us 3 days to get to Brazil with a few setbacks with engine failure and a couple of other things, but it took us 3 days to get down to Rio. What was the other part of your question?
I was just asking you about the spirits of the U.S. team.
Oh, the spirit. The spirits were good. We had... When we played the league team, English league team in New York, we gave them a pretty good battle and could have won the game, like in most cases. But we played fairly well, and the players hit it off pretty good with the style of play and the few times that we did play together. That game, I think, raised our spirits. Bill Jeffrey was the coach, and Bill was a... He was a good coach in that he didn't do too much coaching, mainly because he didn't have any time to, just a couple of days. He said, hey, we're going to put you in your positions where you usually play and give it your best. You never know what's going to happen when the whistle blows. And really, from that standpoint, Bill never talked about winning or losing. He just talked about doing your best out there and let's see what happens. I thought when we went down there that we were going to get clobbered. But the first game against Spain, which I thought was the best game we played of the three games that counted, the game against Spain, we were leading them 1-0 with 8 minutes to play, and they got 3 goals in the last 8 minutes. But we had played a good game against them. So we had a little bit of encouragement from that, and I think that helped going out on the field against England in our second game.
I'm talking by phone with Pennsylvania native and former Penn State soccer coach Walter Barr, one of two surviving members of the 1950 U.S. soccer team. So on to game two against England, and it was scoreless in the first half. And then in the second half, the United States scored, and you assisted on the goal. How would you describe how that play developed?
Well, before the goal, I'd have to point out that England was all over us the first 20, 25 minutes. We couldn't find the ball. They hit the woodwork a couple of times, and they could have been up by 2, 3, 4 goals. But it was one of those games that the U.S. team held on and got a goal late in that first half. At halftime, Bill Jeffrey gave just a very little talk about, let's keep doing what we're doing. We're getting a little bit better as the game wears on. And he said, I think that the English team might be getting a little bit nervous or desperate because they've had most of the play and haven't scored. And as it turned out, that's the way it did go. The first half, it was all England, especially the first 20 minutes. The second half, it was still England, but we were starting to play a little bit better. And as the game went further on, I don't know this for a fact, but it seemed that England was getting a little bit desperate and maybe thinking, hey, maybe this is one of those days we can't buy a goal.
Now talk about the play that that you helped the United States score on. It was your shot that ended up being deflected into the goal, right?
Right. I got a lot of publicity out of that. It was a throw-in from the right-hand side. I collected the ball at about 30 yards from the goal on the right-hand side, pushed it ahead. Nobody picked me up right away. And I took a shot that was going from left to right, to the goalkeeper's right. Bert Williams was a goalkeeper, one of the tops in the world. And I'm sure he would have handled my ball or deflected it somehow. But it was a decent shot. Was into the goal mouth. And Joe Gatchens, how he did it, I don't know because I've never seen a picture of it. But in traffic, he got a piece of the ball. It was just a deflection, but he got a piece of it. And the goalkeeper is leaning to his left, I think leaning to his left, and the ball's gone back to his right. So it wasn't a shot that was a goal all the way. It was a shot that was deflected. But so many games, that's what happens. It's not the good shots that hit the crossbar and so forth. It's probably a deflection that just took a good bounce. But it wasn't anything special. It was just a decent shot that was deflected by Joe Gatchens into the goal net. Joe was, you had to call Joe. I played with him in a few games in New York, and Joe was a gypsy. That's what we called a player that didn't really play in his position, but he could smell things around him, and he was always moving in the box and getting himself open. And he just got himself a little space and got a nickel in the ball. It was enough to change direction, and it turned out to be the winning goal.
And the United States, as you said, held on and won the game. What was the feeling like when that final whistle blew and you realized, you and your teammates realized what the U.S. had done?
Well, we certainly were very happy about it. And I'll never forget this, that during that period when the game ended and spectators came onto the field and they lifted up Joe Vacca and a few other players, Frank Borgi, the goalkeeper, I'll never forget thinking to myself, boy, I feel sorry for those guys. How are they ever going to explain being beaten by the United States? We were 50-1 odds in England, and Brazil were the favorites to get into the final game. As it turned out, neither one got there.
And, of course, Joe Gatchens would end up dying tragically in Haiti.
Right, right.
As you reflect upon his life, years later, what thoughts go through your mind?
Joe came from a well-to-do family. I think they were in law or something, but a well-to-do family that was on the opposite side of the political party, who was Papa Doc Duvalier at the time. Joe was not a professional person, although he was going to Columbia University while he was playing with a new team in New York. He didn't even make the trials, but he was picked up after the trials were over. And Joe was a good player. He went over and played in France for a couple of years after the World Cup and got injured. But I don't know what to say about Joe other than he was one of the nicest guys you want to meet. And they say he was picked up by Papa Doc's military, kept in jail for a couple of days, and then executed, mainly to get at his family, who the whole family was in direct opposition to what Papa Doc stood for. Now, no one's ever confirmed that 100%, but that seems to be the story. The sad part was his wife she could not remarry for 7 years because that was the law at the time in Haiti. If your husband took a walk or the wife took a walk, they had to wait 7 years before they could marry again. I've met the family a couple of times, and they certainly were nice people.
And, Walter, as you went on in life, you took over as the coach at Penn State. I'm curious if you ever invoked the memory of 1950 in a pep talk that you gave your players at Penn State when you were coaching.
No. Close as I would come to saying something like that, say, hey, in any game, either team can win. Starts out 0-0, and you go from there. So many times you're the favorite, and something happens, and you get bumped off. So I never put any extra pressure on teams or examples or whatever, other than, hey, let's do our best and let's see what happens.
And have you been watching this year's World Cup and following the U.S. team?
Yes, the U.S. team's doing well. They're well organized. They're not making mistakes on defense. And they probably stand a much better chance of tying or beating Germany than we had of beating England in 1950. But they have to play the game, and I think they have a good possibility of getting that tie or that draw. They don't make many mistakes on defense, if any, and all you need is one shot on offense to put your team ahead.
Okay, so I'll put you on the spot. Are you predicting a U.S. victory tomorrow?
No, I'm not predicting a victory for them. I'm predicting that they play a good game and that they're very competitive. So many times during the past, we put an all-star team on the field against a foreign club, especially, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and they take a pretty good beating, possession-wise and goal-wise. So I hate to put any pressure on them, but I think they have a good chance of coming away with the tie or even the victory. They have some good players.
We've been talking by phone with Pennsylvania native and former Penn State soccer coach Walter Barr, one of two surviving members of the 1950 U.S. soccer team that shocked the world by beating England 1-0 in the last World Cup played in Brazil. Walter Barr, it has been such a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Nice talking to you. I hope it didn't bore you.
Oh, certainly not, sir. Thank you very much, Walter.
Okie doke. Take care.
You too. From the World Cup of 1950 to the World Cup of today, it's a stark contrast. Many more people are following the World Cup in many more ways, including the fans who have descended upon Piper's Pub on Carson Street. We'll take you there when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.